Making the Turn with Peter Kessler on the PGA Tour Network. Golf talk is only Peter can deliver.
If you have been listening since the beginning of our show, you remember that at the top of the hour, I talked about Gary Player, the power of positive thinking, the fact that he saw his name in gold letters, showing him as the winner of the 1965 U.S. Open before the U.S. Open began. He saw it right under the name of Ken Venturi. He's joining us now. It's a happy surprise. We found out just before the break. You know what, Gary? Yours is the only birthday I seem to remember, November 1st, 1935, right?
Oh, well, that's very nice of you to remember that, Pete.
Now, here's one other thing I remember. 163, at least, tournament wins worldwide, and, of course, nine majors, and much to Jack's unhappiness, you got to the career Grand Slam before he did.
Well, that was a big thrill to do that, and I must say, I must give Jack some credit for that, because I was going to go to Greensboro and play, which I did every year, and he said, well, why don't you come with me? You want to win the U.S. Open? Come with me, and we'll go and practice. And I said, no, no, and he convinced me. And but Jack, being the good sport that he always is, I never forget to give him the credit.
How could you have even thought of not playing in the Open that year?
No, it was not playing. It was going to practice. Practice the week before. Instead of going to Greensboro, which I wanted to do, okay, and then go to the Open, he said, you need to have routine. And you saw what Ben Hogan did. He always went and practiced there, and that's what I've done. And I said, well, I'll give it a try, and he convinced me to do it.
Isn't it true that Jack practiced a lot more than he let on? I mean, Trevino said to me once that, you know, Jack spent an incredible amount of time on the putting green behind his house, and it was the first time I remember knowing anybody had a putting green, and that he would play the golf course Lost Tree, but he'd tee off with 4 and 5 irons to leave himself long irons into holes that otherwise would have been pitches.
I think that Jack definitely practiced hard, but I don't remember him practicing like some of the guys who really come to mind, like Ben Hogan or myself or Trevino. But he did practice hard. But Jack was wonderful at making adjustments. He'd come into the tournament not playing well, and he'd find that little thing that was lacking. And I think this is something that a man like Tiger Woods does, a lot of other players do, but there are quite a few players that playing. If you look at Trevor Immelman at the moment, he's been struggling with his game since Augusta, and having played so superbly well there, he's obviously been a big change of pace and of life, but he hasn't quite found out. There's some little thing that he's not doing, and he's not putting his finger on it, and that's just a special gift that Jack had.
Gary, who did you look to have them take a look at your golf swing when you might have been off kilter yourself in the best years of your game?
My wife actually was a fantastic coach. She, you know, I think that too many players get paralysis of analysis. And I think that's one that you've got to be very careful of not doing that. And she obviously grew up with me. We played together since we were 14 years of age. She knew my swing, and she could just point out a tiny little thing that made a big difference to me. My father-in-law was my coach. And then I obviously listened to a man who I thought was the best player I ever saw in my life, Ben Hogan. I'm not saying he was the best scorer because, you know, we had all those spike marks on the green and you didn't have sand wedges that were illegal that could spin the ball back the way they do out of the rough. So he was the best player that I ever saw, and he said a few things to me that always stood me in good stead.
Now, how important was it that Hogan and you were roughly the same physical size? Did that make it easier for you to know that if he told you something, it would suit your stature and your build?
I think there's a bit of merit in that, but there's certain moves that every golfer should make. Irrespective of whether you're 6'8" or you're 5'8", there are certain fundamentals that apply to all golfers. Now, they will look different, and everybody will have their own way of doing things. If you look at Trevino, he aimed 100 yards left of the flag, took the club outside the line with a shut face, and hit the ball with a cut. And then Arnold also had a shut face going back, but he aimed out to the right and had a draw on the shot. So, you know, golf is a stray, as they say in Scotland. It's a strange game, laddie.
Well, let me start at the beginning. How are you, Gary?
I'm very well. I'm up here in Philadelphia. I just flew in from my ranch from South Africa to see my 21st grandchild, which is a daughter, in Philadelphia here, and to see the other grandchildren also in Florida and here. So it's been very nice. 3 days, a long way to come here for, though, but it's been worth it.
Congratulations on that 21st. You know, how would you compare how long it would have taken you, say, in 1960 to do that trip in terms of number of hours relative to today?
Well, that's a good question. Used to take 40 hours. We used to travel, as you know, with six children. 40 hours, five stops, no jets, 30 pieces of baggage. Now you get on a flight and you fly from here to Johannesburg nonstop in 16 hours, a massive difference. Really, when I think of how I had to travel around the world and play in all the tournaments, I have no question in my mind that had I been born over here and just played the American Tour, I would have won a lot more majors. It was very difficult in those days to fly all those tremendous distances with the time change, obviously. But I wanted to play internationally, and thank goodness I did that, because my golf design business at the moment is doing very well, whereas most people are doing very poorly and have had to lay off people, and things are tough at the moment. But having traveled internationally into all corners of the globe, like Bulgaria and Poland and Cyprus and Morocco and China and India, you know, our design company is doing very well.
They didn't have disposable diapers in 1960 either.
That's exactly right. You had to get on the plane, and one of the jobs I often do, I had to go back and wash it out. I mean, you really, when you think about it, and we didn't have courtesy cars meeting us at the airport. It was often I took a Greyhound bus to a tournament. And I think of Tiger and these guys with all their jets all the time. Good luck to them. I think it's wonderful. But it was a different life. When I arrived at St. Andrews in first time in 1955, I went up by train, traveled all the two seasons I spent in Europe going by train. But it was really something that made me appreciate things, made me have respect for people in the gallery, to be kind and nice to people. I see a lot of celebrities treating people very, very poorly. And a lot of athletes have been very, very spoilt. And that's why when I meet an athlete who appreciates the things, and you should appreciate it, because athletes live in a different world. They are blessed to make the kind of money they do. Oh, certainly, they've turned out to be the best in the world. But we've got to remember that it's the man in the street and the big corporates that keep us going.
You know, we've, of course, been thinking a lot about Seve Ballesteros and the fact that he had a cancer and still does, and had a number of surgeries. And one of the things that makes me think of you when I think of Seve, of course, is I think of 1978 at the Masters, and I think of the back nine where, if I remember it correctly, and correct me, but I think that you made six birdies and touched the hole with the other three putts on the ones that didn't go in, and that Seve was playing with you, and that had to be the best playing lesson of his life.
He was extremely nice the way he came up when I held that putt on the last hole and gave me a hug. And there was my caddy also giving me a hug, because he said, I need a new house, when I arrived at the tournament. So, and then he said afterwards, he says, Gary, you teach me how to win Masters, which was a very, very nice compliment. And I think of Seve, and I think of the game today, I think of the changes that have taken place. When I started doing weight training 63 years ago, you were known as a nut. You could not do weights. And then came the change in all the golf equipment, the ball going 50 yards further, metal heads, grooves on the short irons, as I say, that are really not really legal in my eyes, and they're changing back again, thank goodness. And no spike marks on the green, et cetera, and jets. A massive, massive change. And you've seen all this technology come about, and now I'll be known as another nut, and I'm going to say the next thing that's going to happen is there's going to be a change in the way athletes eat. I don't think that you'll find, in my opinion, this is only my opinion, in 20 years' time, I don't think you'll see any athletes eating meat, chicken, fish, any animal fats whatsoever. They'll all be vegetarians. Because the people that are living the longest in the world are basically vegetarians. and you'll see this massive change because there's so many steroids and hormones and antibiotics and all the chicken and fish and meat that we're eating and fertilizers that it's going to change the whole structure of things. There's not going to be this idea that you have to pump your body with protein. Too much protein can do your bones a lot of harm. And if I'm going to leave one message with you today, Peter, I'm going to say your listeners should go today, if they are interested in improving their quality of life, and go and buy a book called Diet for a New America. Diet for a New America. And it'll be a knowledge. And this is what's going to start happening. You're going to see athletes training and eating in a far superior way.
Let me ask you one last question. Tell me about Tiger. What do you see? What do you see in Tiger Woods? What's your impression of him that I can't, as a recreational player, even begin to fathom?
He plays golf, and he's in another zone. And I always hear these psychologists telling their players, go out and have fun. I never could do that. I mean, obviously, it was enjoyable when you played. But I went out. I was very uptight. I was focused. And Tiger's like that, too. You don't see him talking around to his cousins and his family. He realizes you only win by one shot. So he is in Zone A. Most players are in Zone B, C, and D. But he's one of the few players I see in Zone A. Hogan was in Zone A. And that makes a big difference. And that's why he can play badly and play on his C game and win golf tournaments. Now, Nicholas could do that as well. And superstars, which there are not many superstars the world's ever seen, superstars could always play not their best and still manage to win. Tiger is, I think, the best putter that I've ever seen. I always thought that Bobby Locke from South Africa was. His recovery work, his short game. When he starts driving the ball well, when he starts driving the ball well, and he's going through a bit of a phase at the moment, when he does, he might win 8 out of 10 tournaments.
It is so great to hear your voice.
He's a genius. He's a genius. That if you watched him win the U.S. Open last year with a sore knee, and where he got pars and birdies, where he drove the ball, I've never seen anybody in the world that could do that. And I take my hat off to that. That is part of the game. But he's also trained physically, which has enabled him to get out of the rough. So you've got to give him all the credit in the world.
Thank you, Gary. It is an absolute pleasure to be with you.
Take care, Peter.
That, of course, was Gary Player, truly one of the greatest players in the history of the game. Here's a fellow who played in the era of Arnold and Jack and Billy Casper. He won more majors than Billy, who won 3. He won more than Arnold, who won 7. He won 9 major championships, which means that there's only 3 guys ahead of him on the all-time list. And that would be Jack Nicklaus with 18, that would be Bobby Jones with 13, and Walter Hagen with 11. And that was when he was playing international golf, when nobody else was playing international golf. He's flown to almost every single country in the world where golf was played, and he always found something nice to say about the golf course. Even if he hated it, he would say, those are the finest flag sticks that I've ever seen on any golf course. I want to thank all of you for being with me again today on Making the Turn. We'll join you again in the morning.